Bert Cohen here, keeping democracy alive.
Check for pulse.
Stand clear. Push to shock.
So yes, there's a huge gap between public opinion and public policy. That people don't feel that they can do very much.
You know what this is? This is a very Hamiltonian system. Alexander Hamilton being the guy here in a very un-Jeffersonian.
In the case of the Republicans, it's dramatically the opposite. But even in the case of the Democrats.
An absolute typhoon of terror against African Americans in the South.
America's fascists are those people who think that Wall Street comes first and the American people come second.
Really seen as a financial sector that's gotten out of hand.
The shootings, the violence, that is not the drug problem. That is, in fact, the drug policy problem.
I speak tonight for the dignity of man.
Attacks on democracy anywhere are attacks on democracy everywhere, at least in my opinion. The brutal political dictator Francisco Franco ruled Spain with an iron fist from 1939 to 1975 when he finally died. But many now see what looks like kind of an ominous rise in Francoism. The central government in Madrid, Spain, is a beehive activity on many fronts, all determined to crush the exercise of democracy in the Catalan region in the northeast of Spain, an area that includes the great city of Barcelona. But like good Democrats everywhere, mass resistance is greeting the authoritarian power of the central government. The struggle for holding a referendum on Catalonian independence has gone on for many years, and it all comes to a head October 1st. The central government of Mariano Rajoy is going all out in so many ways to stop the vote from happening, not the least of which is the use of fear. Political repression of this scale has probably not been witnessed in Catalonia since Franco. This program is called Keeping Democracy Alive, and democracy is something treasured by people everywhere in the world. When it is threatened anywhere, it is threatened everywhere. I'm very pleased to have with us today from Barcelona in Catalan Spain, Dick Nichols, Green Left Weekly's European correspondent. Dick, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks very much, Bert.
Well, thank you. And what is the proposed referendum? What does it call for? Not everybody's been following this like you or I have.
The referendum asks a very simple question, and that is, do you want Catalonia to become a state, an independent state, in the form of a republic? So that's the question people ask, answer yes or no to.
Ah, very simple. Very straightforward, for sure. That's nice. That's really clear. Sometimes they get messy. Why does Catalonia seek independence? They have been talking about this for many, many years. Why do they seek independence?
Well, what's happened is independence sentiment in Catalonia used to run around 15 or 20%, and that was up until around 2006. And the Socialist Party, the Social Democratic Party in Spain, called Socialist Workers Party, and their Catalan sister party, who were in government at that time, created a statute of autonomy. And this statute of autonomy increased the powers of regional government in Catalonia. And what happened was that statute was voted up in the Spanish Parliament, it was voted up in the Catalan Parliament, and then it was adopted and supported by referendum in Catalonia. What that provoked was a rebellion, really, by the People's Party, that's the conservative opposition with still strong Francoist influences on it, which then did a huge petitioning campaign, collected 4 million signatures around the rest of the Spanish state, and put pressure on the Constitutional Court to amend this statute, even though this statute had been adopted, as I say, by two parliaments and by referendum in Catalonia. In 2010, what happened was that the Constitutional Court ruled that major sections of this statute were, quote, unconstitutional. I won't go into the details, but the main one, I think, that really enraged people here was that Catalonia could not call itself a nation, as is in the original draft of the statute. It had to call itself a nationality, which meant that Spain was the nation, but Catalonia was a nationality. So that was the first thing, the spark that really sort of started pro-independence sentiment rising above the 20% threshold. And then we had the economic crisis here from 2008, and that just deepened the sentiment here that we've just got to get out of Spain. And that was a very strong, strong sentiment. So the pro-independence sentiment rose very rapidly after 2012 to between 40 and 50% of the population, according to all polls. And that was what drove it, was what the evidence of this sentiment most was that we've had six consecutive years of million-plus strong demonstrations in Barcelona every Catalan National Day.
Wow. What is the government of Rajoy, I hope I pronounced that right, doing to stop the vote from taking place? Well, back up a little bit. Why are they trying to stop the vote? And then maybe give us some examples of what they're doing to actually stop the vote from happening.
Well, this is the question everyone asks. Anybody would think, well, they've had a referendum in these circumstances in Scotland, had a referendum in Quebec, three referenda
right.
In Quebec. Why doesn't the Rajoy government actually just do a negotiated referendum, as happened in Scotland? And then they would have a good chance of actually winning it, because it's not as if there's a consistent 50% majority, certainly not to date, in favour of independence.
Hmm.
And this question actually goes to the character of the Spanish state and of the People's Party, but also the Socialist Workers' Party government, which is the sentiment about the Spanish state in large sections of the Spanish population, but especially in the establishment, is that Spain is, in the old Francoist phrase, one, indivisible and free. And so the Rajoy government maintains that they are constitutionally unable to allow a referendum, though this is not true, as many jurists point out. The basic sentiment is this, what we can call Spanish centralism, a Spanish patriotism, which is the Catalans are not going to be allowed to make a separate decision, because the Catalans are not really the nation. The nation is Spain. And, of course, this becomes an extremely intractable problem, because all the Catalans, and the majority of Catalans, feel that they are Catalans. All the sort of surveys show a majority of people feel that they are either exclusively Catalan or Catalan and Spanish. And 80% of the population here is in favour of a Catalan right to decide, even where they would oppose Catalonia becoming independent. But that's the attitude that determines the positioning of the Rajoy government. And I have to say that if Rajoy didn't do that, then he would not last as Prime Minister. Because what we're dealing with here is a social attitude held over, that's a holdover from the Francoist days. It was very, very strong in the Spanish Civil War, and it was the one thing that least changed in the transition from the Franco dictatorship to the sort of low-grade democracy that we have in the Spanish state today.
So maybe you can say a little more about that, how it's not full democracy yet. Is that right?
Well, you've got the fundamental problem in Spain is like in Turkey. You have a state which is in reality plurinational. People who feel Spanish, you have people who feel Basque, you have people who identify as Galicians, people who identify as Andalusians, and at the moment, most importantly and most powerfully, you have people who identify as Catalan. If you have a state structure that doesn't really recognise that, though it pays a certain lip service to it, then you have a permanent problem. And the structure of the Spanish state will have a permanent crisis until there's a political leadership that is capable of really addressing the plurinationality of the Spanish state. And that really means accepting that the nations and the nationalities that make up the Spanish state have the right to decide whether they're going to be part of it, and if they're going to be part of it, on what terms they're going to be part of it. And that problem has been there for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yes.
There's a famous saying in Spain, which was by the philosopher Ortega y Gasset back in the Second Republic in the 1930s. And he said in a debate about the Republican Constitution, "The Catalan problem cannot be solved, it can only be lived with." And that is the sort of attitude that is common at the moment.
Interesting. And we see this in many places in the world. As we speak, Kurdistan is trying to become independent. I mean, and we come, you know, questioning what is the definition of the word nation. You know, it seems like there are kind of a bunch of nations within what is currently Spain. If you just tuned in to us, we're talking about the vote to secede, become an independent state, scheduled for October 1st, and a lot of repression against it. Our guest today in Barcelona is Dick Nichols, who was European correspondent for Green Left Weekly, a very interesting magazine. So the Prime Minister of Catalonia, and I hope I pronounce this right, Carles Puigdemont, described what the central government is trying to do in crushing the ability to vote as a de facto coup. That's some strong words. That's from the Premier of Catalonia. The words de facto.
Well, that's what people, the majority of people, feel it to be here. I mean, the phrase that is most commonly used, it's a de facto state of emergency or a creeping coup. So what the tactics of the Spanish government have been to, apply very harsh legal sanctions against anything that they judge or that the courts have ruled that are illegal. And the high point of this wave of legal and police repression took place on the 20th of September, when the Civil Guard, which is the paramilitary police in the Spanish state, and the Spanish National Police, raided 13 buildings, including Catalan government ministries here in Catalonia, and arrested 13 senior officials who were supposedly in charge of preparing the referendum, or were in charge of preparing the referendum. They were jailed and charged with a set of charges, including disobedience to a lawful instruction, misuse of public funds, and various other minor charges. And the reaction here was of outrage, and the outrage wasn't just felt on the part of people who were pro-independence, because basically what that did was demonstrate to a lot of people who were hesitating between the two broad sides here, sort of pro-unionist and pro-independent side, that the Spanish state was prepared to ride roughshod over democratic rights, which is what's happened.
Yeah.
And now you have a situation where the a whole lot of international organisms, Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, etc., are describing what's happening in Catalonia as a persistent violation of human rights. And this is what has produced, and I'll just stress this point, this is what has produced these massive demonstrations that we have going on in Barcelona, but not just in Barcelona, in the major provincial capitals as well, has been going on ever since the 20th of September. And the place is sort of extremely tense at the moment, because you have the Spanish force, the Spanish police and the Civil Guard being strengthened every day. Three-quarters of all riot squads in the Spanish state are presently in Catalonia.
Whoa.
10,000 police and civil guards are in Catalonia. And it's obvious that what they're going to try and do is physically stop people voting on Sunday.
Wow.
So that's where we are at the moment.
Physically stop people from voting. That's quite a picture. And What else are they doing specifically? They've been doing a lot of things, taking down posters, confiscating printing presses, I guess. This is a civil...
I'm sorry, Bert, I didn't hear that. Very faint.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
All right, I'll get real close to the microphone here. Let me just see here. Paint us a picture, if you would, of what the central government is doing to prevent the vote from taking place. Like, for example, the Guardia Civil, the Civil Guard, taking posters. They've been doing a lot of physical things. Paint us a picture of what they're doing to stop the vote from happening.
Well, what the latest thing that has happened is that the prosecutor, the Spanish state prosecutor, their branch office in Catalonia, issued an order that all voting places, all polling stations, were to be sealed off by Saturday, and that there was to be a sort of 100-meter no-go area around them, that where these polling stations were, for example, community health centres or schools, that the people in charge of the keys or the security codes of these locations had to hand them over to the police or the civil guard, and that on the morning of the vote, at 9 o'clock on the morning of the vote, the chief Spanish state prosecutor in Catalonia had to receive a report on, you know, how many polling stations were open and how many polling stations were closed. So we are heading towards this approach of the Spanish government, which is, as I say, determined that this won't take place. And if it takes place, it will be felt to be a massive humiliation of the Spanish state and will provoke a huge political crisis in the Spanish state. They are determined to physically stop this.
Well,
the other thing that is happening is that they're bringing, as I think I may have mentioned, they're bringing police and civil guards from all over the rest of Spain, from as far away as, you know, the Atlantic coast, Andalusia. Basically what you have is a sort of army of occupation, which is carrying out what they hope is going to be a surgical operation that doesn't have too many negative side effects. But the problem with that is it is just increases the rage and anger and determination of people here to do something. So I'll just let you in on a small secret.
Yeah.
For example, in our voting station in the area I live in Barcelona, the locals are going to occupy this early on Sunday morning, or whenever they have to occupy it, and hold out there. And the Catalan National Assembly, which is one of the main mass organisations in Catalonia, has sort of urged people to be at the polling stations at 8 in the morning in a massive crowd. This will increase tension massively because the Catalan police are going to be the meat in the sandwich here. They are under instructions from Madrid, from the Spanish state,
right,
to carry out these orders that have been produced by the Spanish prosecutor. But, of course, their heart is completely not in repressing their own people.
Yeah, I wouldn't think.
And that is going to be a very, very difficult thing. And the head of the Catalan police has said he will give instructions to his people not to stop voting if this endangers public order and this leads to, threats to, physical threats to people.
Wow.
So you have the possibility of some sort of clash between the Catalan police. I'm not saying this is going to happen, but it's
right,
there.
Right.
It's possible. Catalan police and the Spanish National Police and the Civil Guard, which would be a sort of replay in 2017 terms of what happened back in the 30s, in October 1934, when the Catalan police and the Spanish armed forces came to blows.
Mm. And aside from that, you know, military stuff, I understand they've been warning all private media if they carry advertising for the referendum, they'll be liable for prosecution.
Yes.
And what about the website, too?
It must be hard for your listeners to understand, to sort of understand what the extent of this. What is happening is, at the moment, going by the court instructions that have been issued by the Spanish state prosecutor, up to 70,000 people are liable to charges because they're helping in some way or maybe helping in some way with the referendum. For example, 750, around 750, that's 80% of all mayors in Catalonia, have said that their councils will supply the usual voting, the usual polling stations for the referendum. The Spanish state prosecutor immediately charges all these mayors, before they've even done anything, with being in breach of the Constitution, in being in breach of a lawful order, such that even constitutional lawyers who are certainly not in favour of Catalan independence are pointing out that you can't charge people with a crime before they actually commit the crime. So that's just one thing. Another thing is that the headmasters or principals of schools and the directors of the community health centres are being threatened with their job and with having to pay the cost of the policing operation if this state successfully stops this. And just to give an example to people what could happen to them, the former Catalan premier and three of his ministers who carried out the so-called illegal mass consultation, what they called a participatory process in which 2.3 million people voted back in 2014. He has been charged. He's got 2 weeks to pay 5 million euros. His three ministers have got the same time to pay an equivalent amount, I think it's 7 million euros in total, or they go to jail. So the atmosphere they're trying to create is this referendum is toxic, don't touch it, don't go anywhere near it, policy of fear, but the response, of course, is mobilisation and more mobilisation.
Yes.
And mobilisation is touching broader and broader layers of the community.
And I understand the central government did shut down the website for the referendum movement. And tell us about how that went.
They shut down 140 websites to date, referendum-related websites. But unfortunately, it's not an easy thing to actually shut down a website. They shut down the official, as you say, the official referendum website, and that was immediately put up again by a proxy service. So as I explained in my sort of daily note that I send out to a network of people who want to know what's going on here, the Catalan government immediately overcame that. And the mass organisations, like here last night, they shut down the website of Omnium Cultural, which is the cultural and language organisation, which is one of the mass organisations that's building the pro-independence movement. That was shut down, but it was revived within 2 hours. It came up in a new form in 2 hours.
So
there's this cat and mouse game going on all the time around websites. I don't know whether they're getting support. The Catalan government is getting support from Julian Assange, who's very strongly in favour of the referendum. But he's offered that sort of expertise. But that is they're overcoming that. The other thing that has happened is that young computer freaks who just have been cloning websites, cloning the pro-referendum websites, are being charged with various crimes, endangering state security and various other pieces of nonsense. So this is just young people who chasing the web, doing the things they do on the web, and this is the result.
It's often a great democratizing
productive forum, but I think it's been counterproductive because one thing it did, which one thing that the Civil Guard did was that they got hold of nearly all the posters, the official posters, the 1.3 million posters that were printed for the referendum,
right.
The government's official posters for the referendum. So what happened immediately was that the mass organizations put up a website called Let's Paste Up in Catalan, where they put posters, which people could, you know, in PDF form, which people could download. And this produced a movement of community paste-ups of the kind you have never seen. It's impossible to walk down any street in Barcelona, and I walk around a lot, without seeing masses of these, you know, simple posters run off on people's printers at home or by the printeries that are sympathetic with the referendum movement. And so basically, ironically, by actually seizing the official posters, they've detonated this vast tsunami of do-it-yourself propaganda, which is all over the place.
Oh, my goodness. Back during the war in Vietnam, I used to say President Nixon was the best organizer of the anti-war movement. And it sounds like Rajoy is by coming down so heavy-handed. I mean, people haven't forgotten, I'm sure, the iron fist of Francisco Franco. And, people's rights have been won. You write that Catalan rights re-won in the struggles against the Franco dictatorship have to be defended at any cost. Is there...
Well, that's the reaction of people here, because the the state and especially the judicial apparatus of the state has still got these strong Francoist tendencies in it. That is to say, just to explain a bit, when you had the end of Francoism, especially after the failed military coup of 1981, the Socialist Party government, which came in 1982, purged the armed forces. So the armed forces are nothing like the old Francoist armed forces. In fact, their code is, we have nothing to do with politics, we just defend the country. To the extent that, the former head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff here was a Podemos candidate in the last election. But where they didn't do their purge, where they didn't get rid of the old Francoists, was in the judicial system.
Uh-huh.
And of course, when you have a transition from dictatorship to the rule of law, in inverted commas, or the rule of law, then the influence of judges and the influence of the judicial system becomes greater. And the judicial system is a battleground between conservative and progressive or semi-progressive tendencies. It makes, the sort of battles you have in the United States or we have in Australia over nomination of judges look like child's play, frankly. It's a sort of permanent war between the different associations.
Wow.
And where I'm saying all of this is that now that it's the legal system that is the chief weapon in the hands of the government, and that they are using it, brutally and crudely, what it's doing is it's reminding everybody of the Francoist past. So suddenly, when you've got civil guards barging into government buildings and going through everybody's stuff and searching for incriminating evidence, this is all this hits long dead nerves. This reminds people of a past that we wanted to forget, and that is felt not just amongst the generation who went through Francoism and the transition from Francoism, but because it's passed on to the next generation, and even to the, it's passed on to the sons and daughters, but even to the grandchildren. So you go to the student protest, the student occupation at the University of Barcelona. It's like a big teach-in, It's like it reminds you of the Vietnam days.
Yes.
And a very common comment is, "Well, our grandparents didn't conduct a terrible struggle again to free themselves from Francoism, so that we could just see it revive again." So that's a very important characteristic of what's happening here.
Wow, absolutely incredible. If you just tuned in, Bert Cohen here, Keeping Democracy Alive. We're talking about democracy in Spain, the current government being rather heavy-handed about crushing democracy, stopping a vote that's scheduled for October 1st. Will they succeed? How messy will it get? And you mentioned Podemos, Unidos Podemos, has been getting some attention in the international left. Now, there's a lot of parties in Spain, I understand. Where is Podemos on this? Does it have to do with the draconian austerity measures coming down from the top? Is that part of this referenda narrative that's going on?
Well, Podemos, that's a sort of long, hard question to answer because it's complicated. But Podemos, of course, arose out of the Indignado movement, what's called the 15M movement from the 15th of May 2011, when you had the occupation of up to 80 squares in the whole of Spain against austerity. Podemos arose as young people's, but not only young people's, rejection of what was happening in economy, society, rejection of corruption, rejection of all the old Spanish political establishment, both the PP and the PSOE, and a desire for a new sort of politics. And then it had to articulate, Podemos had to go through a process of working out its position on long-standing questions in Spanish politics, which were not part of what had produced it. And the chief one of these was, of course, the national question. And they had a big debate, and I think they had about three or four different positions. So, yeah, they had three or four different positions emerged in this. And basically, at the beginning, their tendency was to say, well, the Spanish ruling class, the Catalan ruling class, it's all just different variations of the same filth. Mm. We've got our filth in Madrid, you've got your filth in Barcelona. This was a mistaken position, even then, because the Catalan National Movement was not a movement of the Catalan ruling class. Catalan pro-independence movement is a movement which involves, medium business, some small business, but basically it's a movement of ordinary, it's a cross-class movement of ordinary people whose, and the common sentiment is, let's just get out of Spain. Let's be in charge of our own affairs. Then we can work it out and have our own arguments and work out what we're going to do, but at least it's going to be us deciding our future. That's, I think, describes the common sentiment.
Real democracy.
But Podemos had to adjust to this. And to their credit, they changed their position, or they articulated a position which was, let's accept that Spain is a plurinational state. Let's accept that you're going to have a plurinational state that works. Then there has to be a right to self-determination. That is to say, what we were saying earlier.
Yes.
People have to be able to vote. The component nations and nationalities have to be able to vote on whether they want to be part of Spain and how they want to be part of it, or whether they want to be independent. And that's the Podemos position. And Podemos says they don't want the Catalans to leave, but they would, they would understand why. That will be a decision for the Catalans to leave. Then when this particular referendum came up, and this is where I'm taking a bit of time to explain this, but it's all complicated. When the referendum came up, it came up as a unilateral referendum because the Catalan governments successive Catalan governments had approached Madrid and said, we want to do a Scottish-style negotiated referendum with you, and they were rejected 18 times. So then they said, well, we're going to do a referendum anyway. And then the Podemos position was, and still is, this referendum is not a genuine referendum because there are not enough guarantees. It can't be a genuine referendum. Well, then you get a whole debate about, well, what guarantees are you expecting? What guarantees is it rational to ask for? Is it reasonable to ask for? And this detonated a big debate within this sort of area of Podemos, big internal debate. And that debate was going on when we had this civil guard raid back on the 20th of September.
Uh-huh.
And then that was like a kind of wake-up call for Podemos and uh-huh. The various political alliances in which it is involved in around the Spanish state, that what we're dealing with here is, you can say what you like about the Catalan bourgeoisie or the characteristics of the Catalan independence movement, you can say all of that, but here we have an attempt to absolutely repress a movement that is democratic. And the left has got to be on the side against the oppressors. And since then, they've come on side.
That's a good explanation. And there's a level of political sophistication on some parts of the left here in the United States that I find very troubling. They oftentimes take the bait. For example, I understand that the Rajoy government would like to provoke violent confrontations with left activists so as to hurt the Podemos, the left movement. Are the people on the left there in Catalonia, are they taking the bait, or have they been, you know, avoiding violence? Because, you know, like here, when the Antifa, you know, punches right-wingers in the face, that only helps the right-wingers here to say, see, they're the bad guys, too. Are they taking the bait, or are they a little more sophisticated in that?
I mean, people here have, you know, had horrible experiences, and I think we can say, I mean, there's always some people, there's always a minority, you know, an ultra-left fringe that thinks, you know, against the violence of the state, violence of the proletariat, or some such formulation. But no, Spain, you've had the whole horrible experience of the Civil War, and then more relevant and more immediate was the struggle in the Basque Country, where the Basque left nationalists ran this armed,
right,
what they called an armed struggle, which was basically a military terrorist operation.
Right, ETA.
ETA,
yes.
Basque Homeland and Freedom, which is about to dissolve, has effectively dissolved. What happened with the Basque Country was, because you had armed attacks and really quite criminal attacks on innocent people, this was a perfect excuse for the PP and the Spanish Centralists, the Spanish Patriots, to paint Basque nationalism as criminal, as a criminal thing.
Yeah.
And so the Catalan movement learnt from that. Within the Catalan movement, there were some people who wanted to do a sort of Catalan version of ETA here. Luckily, that was, you know, nipped in the bud through some very harsh discussions. That was back in the 80s. But the lesson the Catalan movement learned from right early on was, no, peaceful, non-violent, organised resistance. And that's the tactic. And that is what has put the Rajoy government on the spot.
Mm.
And that is what has made it, you know, very difficult for example, the European Commission, who wishes this would all just go away.
Yeah.
We've got enough problems in Europe without having to deal with this. This makes it more and more difficult for them to just pretend it's not happening. And it also means that it is much easier to appeal to progressive people in the rest of the Spanish state on the question of democratic rights. And it's easier to have the discussion, and it's happening now. It's very, very progressive. It's happening in even some of the most, you know, anti-Catalan parts of the rest of the Spanish state. You can have the discussion about the right of nations to self-determination, right to decide. You had armed struggle going on in the Basque Country, that was impossible.
Yeah.
It was all about, you know, these criminals
yeah.
were killing people.
Yeah.
So, just to answer your question, no, there's the general feeling is no, we have, and it's very, very strong. And, for example, this is why it is a joke that the big mass rally on September 20 after these raids, which was completely peaceful, the Spanish High Court is now going to charge the organisers of this rally with inciting a turbulent mob. That's the literal charge.
Hmm.
You know, when this was a rally, this was a mass demonstration of ordinary people in the street with families, etc., etc. So the answer to your question is no, that is internalized, that understanding.
That's good.
It's to solve all problems, because come Sunday,
yes,
what happens when you've got a ring of police around a polling station and you've got 2,000 people waiting to get in. Do you just try and push in, or do you not try and provoke confrontation? And that was something we're going to see tested on Sunday.
My goodness, it's quite scary indeed. And we talked a little bit about Vietnam, and of course the U.S. canceled democracy in 1956. They canceled an election because they knew Ho Chi Minh was likely going to win. Well, you know, many years later, of course, that side did win. And, you know, how many people died and got, you know, the country was destroyed. But with the Vietnam comparison, President Nixon emphasized law and order, playing on fear of people in his often violent crackdown of freedom of dissent. I find it interesting that, as you write, in the intensifying battle for the hearts and minds, the Rajoy's government's message of the need to defend the law is now being repeated ad nauseum by the mainstream Spanish media. The Spanish public is thus being prepared to feel that Catalonia had it coming if the Rajoy government decides to use more of the what they call the instruments of the rule of law at its disposal. That sounds like a real threat of state violence. How is that playing with the public?
Well, that has simply reinforced what we were talking about, which is this commitment to mass, nonviolent, peaceful resistance. Because everybody knows that that's what they want. And the political leaders of the movement here, you know, the MPs from the Republican left of Catalonia, and a whole lot of political leaders, people, the respected leaders of the movement, have hammered this question of peaceful resistance, mass demonstrations, and they've called for demonstrations in the rest of the Spanish state, and they've got them. And that's a very good thing, because during the years of the ETA conflict in the Basque Country, there was never a demonstration in support of the Basque right to self-determination.
Interesting.
I don't remember them, and there may have been one or two. After September 20, after the Civil Guard raids here, there were between 40 and 50 demonstrations in the rest of the state. And in Madrid, a big demonstration, which, of course, is just what you want, because it spurs the whole debate about, you know, plurinationality, the right to decide, what sort of Spain do we want, how should the different nations relate to each other, et cetera, et cetera. And that's precisely what you want, because the more that discussion goes on, the more the sort of, how would I put it, the degenerated nature of the present constitution and the anti-democratic nature of the constitution that was adopted in 1978 becomes visible to more and more people. And the need for, you know, deep-going constitutional change becomes clear, not just here, and not just in the Basque Country, not just in Galicia, but in the whole of the whole of the state.
Interesting.
They would love there to be violence.
Yeah.
There was nothing they would like more than there to be violence like in the old days in the Basque Country, and they can send in the civil guards. What would be nice is that one of the civil guards was shot. Wouldn't that be terrific?
No.
Then we can justify, you know, everything.
Total crackdown.
That's not going to happen.
God, I hope not. It sounds like people in Spain have learned from history, unlike some other places that I know of, like here. I wonder about why the Rojas government is so willing to, you know, threaten and use fear. I wonder how worried they are about the threat to the overall stability of the current Spanish state. I mean, last time I checked, unemployment was very high in Spain. Is that still true? And how much of a factor in the nervousness of the state is this? Is the very credibility of the state at stake here? Is that why they're so freaking out?
Well, I think, that's a very good question, but I can't answer it really confidently, because at the moment the phase we're in now is of hysterical anti-Catalanism in the in the media, in the mainstream media. In the TV, on the radios, on the four main papers in Madrid. The comparisons are the Catalans are outlaws, secessionist outlaws. They've got the comparisons are there with, you know, Nazis, with right-wing nationalists in the rest of Europe. You know, the word populism gets used every second sentence. So that's out there. That's their campaign. Why I can't answer it is I don't know how that campaign is playing in the rest of the state.
Yeah.
You have a very interesting station here called the Sixth Channel. The Sixth Channel is the, because there's a big left movement in Spain, the Sixth Channel is actually makes a lot of money by doing left-wing programs. You can't, and that's something that would happen in Australia or the United States, I can imagine. A commercial program, a commercial television station, makes profit doing left-wing programs.
Mm-hmm.
They've actually been covering quite well what's been happening here in Catalonia, but they've gone into a completely schizophrenic existence. That is to say, that I'm not just trying to explain it. They go and interview the students down at the occupation at the University of Barcelona, and you have these really good, young, articulate people explaining why they're pro-independence. And basically they're saying we're pro-independence because we want a better country than the Spanish state can ever be.
Uh-huh.
And especially the Spanish state run by the PP, by the People's Party and Rajoy. We're not opposed to the Spanish people, which is absolutely true. So that is to say, the attempt to portray Catalan nationalism as racist, as anti-Castilian or anti-Spanish, only works with those who want to believe it, because there's no truth to it at all. And
well,
these young people explain, well, this is why we're doing it, and it's very appealing.
Yeah.
So how does this play in the rest of the state, especially with people of their young people of their own age? Well, we know that Podemos got 20% of the vote in the whole of the Spanish state at the last elections.
Quite impressive.
And an important part of it was their commitment to the right to self-determination and Spain as a plurinational country. So it's not as if there's Spain today is the Spain of even 10 years ago. And this means the Rajoy government has got to be very careful that it thinks, oh, all we do is just bash the anti-Catalan drum in the rest of the state, and that gives us more votes.
No.
Well, it might do with the older generations. It might do with your dyed-in-the-wool conservatives. But it's increasingly not going to work. And when you're a minority government in the Spanish parliament, this has got the potential to blow up. The key force that in this is the Spanish Socialist Party, the Social Democracies, and the Socialist Workers' Party, which supports the legal operation taking place in Catalonia, makes all these nice-sounding noises about that we have to have politics, we have to have a different proposal. Mariano Rajoy has no proposal. His only proposal is apply the law.
Mm.
And so they have their proposal, which is for, you know, a constitutional conference which amends the existing constitution, but which doesn't recognise, effectively recognise plurinationality. If the repression increases, then the PSOE is seen to be aligning with this repression more and more, then an increasing number of PSOE voters will pass across to Podemos, and the party's allied to Podemos. And that's the big struggle at the level of the Spanish state. Who is going to be the, which party, the PSOE or Podemos, is going to be the hegemonic party of the left in the broad sense. So what's happening here has got the possibility of changing that relationship at the level of the state.
Whoa, interesting. Spain is such a beautiful place, Barcelona, gorgeous countryside, wonderful people, great food, I must say. Could there be a general strike? We don't have general strikes virtually never in the United States, but it's
it's not
unfamiliar throughout Europe. What about the possibility of a general strike?
There's a chance, as we speak, the minority unions here, the more radical unions, just to try and explain this, that in Spain, as in France, union affiliation is basically by political ideology. So you have the workers' commissions, which was the old Communist Party union. You've got the General Union of Labour, which was the Social Democratic Trade Union Confederation. You've got the CGT, which is basically a semi-anarchist confederation. Then you also have confederations which are just trade unions, you know, like professional associations. So it's very complicated. But what is happening is that the more radical parts of the broad trade union movement are talking about a general strike, calling a general strike for October the 3rd. The mainstream confederations so far have not ruled out a general strike, but they're insisting that there's no point having a general strike unless it's got massive support.
Right, right.
So that they're basically engaged in testing the waters to see what support there would be for a general strike.
Wow. Yeah, because it...
The problem is what is the demands of the general strike?
Right.
Because you've got here, the government, the situation at the moment is that the government, the mass movement, the Catalan government and the Catalan mass movements and the bulk of the people are all on the one side. So it's not a general strike against the Catalan government. What is it? It's, you know, it would have to be a general strike targeted in some way against the Rajoy government.
Yeah.
So that's all being discussed at the moment, but you certainly can't rule out that we will have a general strike.
Well, there's nothing quite so powerful as a general strike, nonviolent but incredibly powerful, if you get enough people to do it, for sure. I hate to ask this. Could there be another...
Interrupted there, Bert. Sorry. What they would do is not just a strike, when we say general strike, it's not just a strike of people who work. Here, a general strike would be all shops close.
Right.
So, you know, everything stops.
Right.
So it's like a society-wide stoppage, if I can put it that way.
Sure. And that's why it's so effective when it happens.
That would be effective, yeah.
Could there be another Spanish Civil War? I hate to ask that. The last one was so awful.
No.
That's good to hear.
No. because even the right wing is... I mean, at the moment we've got... Let me just sort of explain it.
Yeah, yeah.
At the moment we've got right wing, small right wing groups who think their day has come. And so they're doing things like, you know, standing outside Civil Guard headquarters, and as the squad cars come out of the Civil Guard headquarters on their way to Catalonia, they're shouting, "Go get 'em, go get 'em!" You know, and then the Ministry of the Interior has to dissociate itself from this sort of stuff. so there's, you know, small far right groups around, that's for sure, but the Civil War created such such an allergic reaction, such hatred of, you know, a war, for fratricide, put it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
It's unimaginable at the moment. But what is imaginable is if the thing gets out of control, you get sort of a creeping police operation, occupation of Catalonia, removal of status of autonomy, weakening of the regional government. I mean, this is already happening because the finances of the Catalan government have been taken over by the Spanish government, and they're already cutting stuff left, right, and centre. So that, and they're doing that. Well, there's already an appeal on to Europe about this, but they're doing that under some pretext that they've got to meet budget deficit reduction targets. Completely transparent nonsense, you know. So that, much more likely than a civil war, is that sort of scenario where you get, if they defeat the referendum
right
on Sunday, then they use their powers to reduce the powers of the Catalan government. And they reduce the Catalan government to a sort of shell, and then that would be, the struggle would then be about that. But not a civil war, no.
Well, that doesn't, of course, always end a struggle. If there's an occupying force, they may occupy it for a while, but eventually, you know, it doesn't go on forever. Do you think there will be a vote? Will it be...
I think there will be a vote, yeah.
Will it be... will people be held back, do you think, because of the fear campaign, because of the massive police presence?
I don't know whether there'll be a vote on Sunday. Sorry, I wasn't...
clear.
No, I don't know whether nobody can say here. You ask people who are in the know, and they're as unsure as anybody else, because there are too many unknowables in this. The big question is how many people turn up,
right?
And if there's masses of people pressing to get into to vote, what is the reaction going to be of the police? And what's the reaction going to be of the Catalan police when they see their people there ready to vote? And if they're caught between their people and the civil guard and the Spanish National Police, how are they going to react? So, as I say, this is why nobody can say what's going to happen on Sunday, whether there's going to be a vote or not.
My goodness, it's...
But in the medium term, which is what I was answering, the Catalan national question will not go away.
Right.
So even if it has to take a breather, even if the actual movement has to take a breather after Sunday, which it will, the basic drivers of this movement are getting stronger and stronger. And the more repressive the Spanish state is, the more those drivers will get stronger.
I'm sure. Well, I guess that'll have to be the last word, but I recommend this website, Green Left Weekly, and our guest. Thank you so much for being with us from beautiful Barcelona. Well, I wish you all well, peace and justice on Sunday. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bert. A pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise. And I'm going to play the Catalan regional anthem. It's real, real, real brief here. Fade down to something a little bit more recent by The Clash about the last Spanish Civil War, Spanish bombs.
Spanish songs in Andalusia, the street inside in the days of 39. Oh, please leave the Vendana open, Federico Lockers, dead and gone. Bullet holes in the cemetery wall, the black car, the Gotti of the beer. Spanish bombs on the Costa Rica, I'm dying in on the DC 10 tonight.
Spanish bombs,
you have to care of infinito, you have to quera, oh my god, a thong.
Spanish bombs,
you have to care of infinito, just a quera, oh my god, a song.
Spanish
weeks in my disco casino, the freedom fighters died up on the hill.
They sang the red flag,
they wore the black one after they died. It was Mockingbird.